SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, our third and final live right here on this Tuesday on the early line on Sports Grid. He is Donnie Wrightside. I am Ben Stevens. One more hour to go up until 11 a.m. Eastern time. In this third and final hour, we are back to a full slate around Major League Baseball on this Tuesday. Midweek series all across the docket on the diamond from the mind of Donnie Wrightside. Because frankly, right now, it's a lot of MLB. Yeah. We've got three games in the WNBA on this Tuesday as well, but we're still off days of the Stanley Cup Final that starts tomorrow, in the NBA Finals that starts on a Thursday. I have no idea what you said about the W, but I'm probably just going to pretend I did not hear it. We do continue the Women's College World Series in Oklahoma City between Texas Tech and Texas in the WCWS Championship Series. That is now set between the Red Raiders and the Longhorns. Maybe we'll talk about that ever so slightly. Super regional set in the NCAA baseball tournament with the Omaha 8 still outstanding. And, of course, 16 teams, including Donnie's Miami Hurricanes, that advanced to round number 2 starting this weekend. Brian Fonseca joins us later for his early look at the NBA Finals between the Thunder and the Pacers as well, DRS. Plenty to get to here in this final hour.
You want to make me commissioner one more time this morning in the 10 o'clock hour? Here's how you do it with the WNBA. The minute you see Caitlin Clark go down to Paige Beckers, timeout. Timeout on the season. We take three weeks off. Everybody get away. Have a vacation. Relax. We'll all reconvene. We'll extend the season an extra 3 weeks. Let's make sure the superstars are here so we can all enjoy. Because understand this. We ain't watching it. You might say it, Ben, but you're not telling the truth. You're not watching the WNBA right now. We need the superstars back, which includes those girls here. I'll wait 3 weeks to let them get back so we have an equal start and finish to the WNBA season. How about that as commission?
We want to see a start. I'm still paying attention. Yeah, no, you know, you're still, I mean, injuries are a part of it, DRS. I am still paying attention. We've got the two undefeated teams at the top, 7-0, Liberty and the Lynx, who, of course, squared off in the WNBA Finals a season ago. The Atlanta Dream and the Phoenix Mercury, both surprising teams to start. Maybe not Phoenix when you add Alyssa Thompson and Satou Sabally, but you've got a great start for the Mercury at 5-2, and the Dream are 5-2 as well. Of course, the Fever have taken the hit. Caitlin and Clark at least out for another week and maybe then some with the left quad strain. Her Fever team hosting the Mystics tonight. No Caitlin Clark in the lineup. And more bad news for the superstars of the W. Paige Beckers in concussion protocol. She is out probably for a few more games for the Dallas Wings as well. Still bring the enthusiasm though, DRS. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, the enthusiasm is always there in a delayed restart to the WNBA. So he's like, didn't they take off for the Olympics last year? Was that last year that they stopped and let everybody play there? Well, let's just say, hey, look, we're just going to do like the Commissioner's Cup. Just remove the games. We'll play some sort of Commissioner's Cup, and then we'll reconvene when the season gets back, when everybody can get back to be healthy. And this includes all stars, like every star in the NBA. You get injured, time out on the season. The stars are too precious in the WNBA to waste games without them.
Well, yeah, injuries a part of the fold. There was no doubt about it. Now, 44 WNBA regular season games, the longest season ever in the history of the W. All right, DRS, let's talk a little bit of the NBA Finals or the Stanley Cup Finals. What are the people most excited for starting this week? Tomorrow night, the Stanley Cup Final and the playoff rematch, the Cup Final rematch between the Oilers and the Panthers, the NBA Finals on a Thursday in Oklahoma City between the Thunder and the Pacers. You don't love what the public is saying here, but let's just show you what they're talking about in fake public. Which championship series are you more excited for? You being the public out there at Sports Grid on Twitter, NBA Finals, Stanley Cup Final, or neither? Most of the public in our poll pulling for the Cup Final, nearly 45%. Neither, nearly 32%. Getting more of the love than even the NBA Finals. Our guy, Jack O'Danovich, I believe, just the start of the new NFL season, question mark. Jack, our final month without the NFL until March of 2026. How about Neil? Username Hot Sauce is great. I agree, Neil. I do love Hot Sauce, as well. Do you like Hot Sauce?
I got to tell you, like growing up, Ben, I did not like hot sauces. I did not like spicy food. Now, granted, I don't like really spicy food where it's uncomfortable to eat. But as I got later in my years, man, I like a nice hot sauce. I like a nice kick to the food here. You know what I mean? Like little Kung Pao chicken, extra spicy. Delicious, man. I love the extra spice now. So, yes, I'm a hot sauce guy now when I never was before.
DRS, I feel the exact same way. I was never a big spicy guy growing up. Now I appreciate the hot sauce industry. You have so many, it's almost like craft beers. You have so many craft hot sauces. I wish I could try all of them. They all look sensational. I love going to like a little market or something, and they've got some hot sauce you've never heard of. I'm like, I bet you that thing is fantastic. Neil's saying that we, you know the Stanley Cup will be competitive between Edmonton and Florida. If the Pacers can steal game one in OKC, maybe a little bit more enthusiasm
Sounds
for the
like
NBA
me.
Finals. I think that's a pretty good assessment. DRS, not a lot of love for the NBA Finals here in the Fade the Public poll voting. Which way did you go?
Yeah, it's like the Stanley Cup final might be as good as you get, but it's hockey, so it's not going to outdraw the NBA Finals. But I think we can all agree, like, yes, we like OKC, we do, and yes, we like the Pacers, but it's really a whack matchup if you start the season and say, who are the most entertaining finals that we can possibly get? This certainly isn't going to be one. So as I joke about, like, the NBA and, like, Adam Silver, like, hey, man, smoking extra cigarettes here, hoping that we don't blow everything on the NBA Finals and try to resell with, hey, commercials, and this is a four-game series and nobody watch it. Never a good sign. Now, having said this, I voted for neither. Now, hear me out on this, because, like, I'm a Flyers fan as opposed to a hockey fan. It's a good Stanley Cup final. I get it. I'm a Sixers fan. I am an NBA fan in the playoffs, but not a great series lining up, because we talk about hockey, right? We just had Pete on. Minus 128 to win the series. Game number one, like minus 125. Superstars on both sides. A dynasty is about to reborn in a rematch from last year. You can buy into that. But also, you know what the public wants to see. Game five, game six, and game seven. Same thing with the NBA. I'm not excited for the series to start because the odds makers are telling you don't invest a lot of time because this will be over quickly. And game number one is almost a 10-point spread. You give me a Pacers win. Just like Neil said, you give me a Pacers win, Ben, in the first two games. Now we're buying in as a country. Now we're getting invested. Now we want to see the adversity between both of these teams. Now we might be able to get a game six and a game number seven, which is fun. So to start things out, I'm more excited for the Stanley Cup final than I am for the NBA Finals. But right now, it's really a neither for me. I need these two leagues to sell me on why I should be invested in these series. How about that?
I appreciate that, right? I think the Cup Final has the lore. Yeah. Can Connor McDavid bring a Stanley Cup back to Canada and win the first of his career for the Edmonton Oilers? And it is a final rematch. I don't love the idea already of people using the Thunder and the Pacers, two great Midwestern organizations, and saying, we don't have the West Coast. We don't have the East Coast. It's boring. The ratings are going to be awful. It doesn't matter to the NBA. You're getting mad about it. Just enjoy the basketball. With that being said, though, we need to enjoy the basketball. If it is a blowout, DRS, in favor of OKC, as the odds makers expect, then I will get the moans of, okay, well, that wasn't all that exciting. If we can get a sixth game, I'll call the NBA Finals a success from a competitive standpoint.
Yeah, and I need to get this in real quick here. Game number one is 8:30, which I don't understand. Game number two is 8 o'clock.
Yep.
But then 3, 4, and 5 are listed at 8:30. Put it at 8 o'clock! What is this?
I agree with Commissioner Whiteside.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
A full Tuesday slate around MLB after only seven games to start a new week on a Monday. We've got a lot to break down on the diamond from the bright mind of one Donnie Wrightside. Let's get to everything we can today around the Bigs DRS, and that includes out in Los Angeles once again, prime time at the Ravine, late night tonight in L.A. The NLCS rematch from a season ago continues that started 2 weekends ago now with a weekend set in Queens. The Mets took 2 of 3. The Mets win the opener yesterday in extras, 4-3 over L.A. That's 3 of 4 games between these two teams that played in the championship series a year ago. Going to New York, Clayton Kershaw gets the start tonight for the Dodgers. Tyler McGill on the other side for New York. The Dodgers now a minus 142 home money line favorite. Total is 9. We have seen a lot of offense the last few days in L.A., but only 7 total runs yesterday, even in 10 innings. What's the play tonight in Los Angeles?
Yeah, you take a look also at the first start of the year for Clayton Kershaw. Didn't go all that well. 4 innings pitched, 5 earned runs. Actually threw 2 innings in a game that he started versus the Mets about a week ago, week and a half ago. 2 innings pitched, 6 earned runs. Now, did he leave that for injury? Was that a rain out, or was that did he get ejected from that game? Like, what happened in that game? We're only through 2 innings. I can't remember. I thought there might have been a story behind that one.
Rain delay.
Okay, so yeah. 5 innings pitched in his last outing at Cleveland. Very good, Ben. Only 1 earned run giving up, scattered 6 hits here. So maybe that will help. You take a look at that Mets lineup over the last 30 days, hasn't hit left-handed pitching all that well. Lindor, off the charts. Marte, very good. Juan Soto is a lefty versus a left-handed pitcher, very good. The rest of that lineup outside of Mark Vientos has struggled a bit here. But Clayton Kershaw, again, if we can sort of feed off of that last start that he had, maybe things are starting to point in the right direction for him. If we take a look at Tyler McGill on the mound today, struggling a little bit with left-handed batters over the past 30 days, but it's been pretty clean. But the one thing we understand about that lineup for the Dodgers, 1-8, 1-9, it always looks great. And also, maybe getting back into the lineup tonight is Mookie Betts. That should help. Otani, Betts, Freeman, Hernandez, Smith, Muncy, Páez in the first 7 tonight. I do, again, give the slight lean to the Dodgers as I did last night, and they lost that game because I didn't think Blackburn would be very good. McGill is better than Blackburn. We'll see how he performs tonight. But Clayton Kershaw may be rounding into form here in 2025. We'll find that out right away tonight.
Would be a really good sign for LA DRS. There is no doubt. You think about the IL list already for the IL list. That's a repetitive thing. The IL for the starting staff for the Dodgers, not a great sign by any means. Roky Sasaki, Tyler Glasnow, Blake Snell. That's where the Dodgers invested this offseason to even up a starting staff that was pretty depleted despite a World Series run a season ago. If you can have the vet like Kersh be serviceable here in year number 18, that's a pretty good sign for LA. And the Dodgers just trying to get back on top against the New York Mets. We stay in California, but we go up to NorCal where the Giants and the Padres face off once again. Like in Southern California last night in LA, we also saw a 10-inning game. DRS, scoreless in regulation. Great starts for San Diego's Stephen Kolek and San Francisco's ace in Logan Webb. The only run of the game in that 10th inning, top of the 10th frame, Jose Iglesias sac fly RBI for San Diego. That was the game winner. The Giants were a pretty hefty favorite yesterday. The Giants a pretty hefty favorite once again for game number 2. How does this divisional duel play out on a Tuesday evening?
Yeah, hard to gauge. I don't even know how to pronounce the guy. Ryan Burgert. So a nice burger, a nice yogurt. Yeah, combine that together, get a burger down the mound here. Only 14 batters that he's facing in the season. Not a lot to go off of here. Don't love the offense already for the San Francisco Giants. Ben, as you pointed out, you know, a long streak of not being able to score more than 4 runs. That's usually a recipe for disaster. On the other side, Landon Raups on the mound had a pretty good start last time out and some good numbers over the last 30 days going up against a lineup that hasn't hit all that well against right-handed pitching. Same temperatures you're always going to get in San Francisco, low 60s, wind blowing out the center field, big ballpark, not advantageous to hitting. Why don't we go towards another under? I'm not even comfortable with both of these pitchers, and yet we're seeing a 7.5, and I like the under because why? Ballpark and also both of these lineups. I don't think either one of them rakes tonight, to be honest.
Yeah, DRS, I think it's kind of hard to find an issue with that. Again, the Giants have played 15 consecutive games now without scoring more than 4 runs dating back to May 16th. The offense has cooled for the Giants. It was really good to start the year. Donnie's favorite RBI guy to start the season, Jung-Hoo Lee for San Francisco, just not nearly as prolific to begin. Donnie, we have talked about the strength of the National League. 8 teams right now, 5 games above 500 or better, including the hottest team in baseball, the Brewers, who have won 8 straight. 2 teams, though, that have two of the 10 best prices to win the National League pennant, certainly still considered playoff contenders, are below 500. That's the Atlanta Braves and the Arizona Diamondbacks, who start a midweek set against one another tonight in the A. Spencer Strider and Zach Gallen. An ace affair, an Atlanta affair. Total 8.5. The Braves a slight favorite at -138. What do you like out in the A tonight?
Yeah, give me the Braves all day and night tonight. By the way, who replaced Zach Gallen with a tomato can out there on the mound? That's one of the better young pitchers in baseball that we talked about for the past couple years. Look at his last four starts here. 4 earned, 6 earned, 4 earned, 5 earned. All of those not making it out of the not getting out of the sixth inning at least there. That's terrible. You look at the lineup tonight. Acuna, Baldwin, Ozuna, Olsen, and Riley all doing very well against right-handed pitching. And finally, Ben, early June here, down in the Big A, 80 degrees tonight at first pitch with a light wind blowing in. But here's the interesting part. Strider hasn't worked his way all the way back yet. Pedigree pitcher, absolutely. This last Arizona Diamondbacks tonight, you know, Carroll, Marte, Perdomo, Naylor, Suarez, Gurriel, Smith, and Moreno, all extremely high weighted on base percentages against right-handed pitching tonight. So for my money, I actually think I'm getting the better pitcher tonight in Spencer Strider. Can he hold those bats down? I'm going to bet in that direction, because the one thing I don't trust right now, which you should be able to, is trust Zach Gallen in a game where he's the underdog. He's been brutal, and maybe the bats come to life for the Atlanta Braves tonight, and maybe Strider can hold that offense down for the Arizona Diamondbacks.
DRS, a very critical series for both teams. Atlanta 27-31. Arizona only a half game better at 28-31. I thought the D-backs were kind of finding it about a month ago. I bet their updated win total go over 87.5. Not great right now through 59 games for the D-backs. And, of course, over the weekend, some more bad news for Arizona, who is their ace this year. Corbin Burns, elbow tightness, as we share, DRS. Maybe some optimism, but it's never a good sign, at least in what we can expect in the near future. More around MLB next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
The hottest teams in the bigs. That's the Milwaukee Brewers. They have won 8 straight games. They continue that 8-game win streak this week in Cincinnati, but not exactly favored to win this game. Frankly, they weren't yesterday against the Reds either. 3-2 the victory for Milwaukee. Christian Yelich and a solo shot in the top of the third, the last run of the game. The game-winning run put the Brew Crew in front 3-2. They held on to win for their 8th consecutive. Tonight, DRS, they're taking on Hunter Green and the Reds. The ace of staff for Cincinnati has his Reds booked as a -130 money line favorite. Total 8.5. Freddy Peralta on the other side for Milwaukee. Pretty good pitching duel, at least on paper. Trying for 9, but not favored to get to 9 consecutive wins. Does the win streak come to a close for the Brew Crew tonight in Cincy?
It could. 81-degree temperatures. Love to see it at the Great American Ballpark here. Winds blowing in from right field, but shouldn't really affect it all that much. The question is going to be with Hunter Green. We saw him leave a game due to a hamstring injury on May the 7th. Return back to the mound on the 23rd and the 28th. One game at 4 innings, one game at 5 innings. So maybe starting to stretch him out just a little bit where he can pitch into the 6th inning, maybe the 7th inning, if he is having some success. We know him as a pretty good strikeout pitcher on the season, but a little bit flustered over the past couple starts, rightfully so, just getting back to the mound. You take a look at the lineup today for the Milwaukee Brewers, it doesn't present itself great, and that's typical on a night-to-night basis for them. Contreras, Yelich, Hoskins, and also Bowers do have high ISO power number weighted on base percentages against right-handed pitching. But the question's going to be on the other side. What are we getting out of Freddy Peralta over the last 30 days? The 43 batters he's faced against right-handed batters, not all that well. 184 ISO power number, slightly elevated. 346 weighted on base percentage, slightly elevated there. You take a look at Friedel, Eli De La Cruz, Will Benson, the usual suspects in that lineup. But neither one of these teams really checks out as well as maybe they did last night, and we didn't get a high scoring affair there. So for my money, 81 degrees, it's a shame to waste on tonight, but maybe an RBI prop or two, but also possibly staying under the total as long as we get Hunter Green not on a pitching restriction where it says he's only going 5 innings and coming out, which would leave the bullpen for 4 innings.
Yeah, it would be, DRS, an interesting matchup, of course, between the Reds and the Brewers. Hunter Green being back, a very good sign for Cincinnati returning from that groin injury. I need my Reds to get to 80 wins. 29-32 for Cincinnati. They are three games below. Because the Brewers have won eight straight, they're now five games above 500, 33-28. That included a weekend sweep of the Philadelphia Phillies, who have lost four in a row. The Brew Crew DRS, eight straight wins, longest active in both the NL and Major League Baseball, but the longest active win streak in the American League, that's the Toronto Blue Jays. They have won five consecutive games. The Blue Jays today playing host to those Phillies up in the six. Christopher Sanchez gets the start for the Fightins. They're close to a dollar and a half favorite on the road. Bowden Francis on the other side for the Jays. 8.5 the win total. DRS, five straight wins for Toronto, four straight losses for Philadelphia. Which streak comes to a close today?
Yeah, the Phillies better start to hit. We'll get to that in just a second. But Christopher Sanchez on the mound, last start, 5 2/3 innings pitched, two earned runs. Before that, three earned runs. Before that, three earned runs, giving you about six innings or so in those games. He'll be competent tonight, but here's the issue. You look at his numbers over the past month, 120 total batters that he's faced. Great K rate, 26% combined between lefties and righties. ISO power number, 103. Weighted on base percentage, 286. They're all really good numbers. But look at this lineup tonight for the Toronto Blue Jays. And it's always interesting to take a look at how lineups handle left-handed pitch, because you don't get too many swings per month at those. The last 30 days, which most of these batters, high teens, low 20s, but weighted on base percentage high for Guerrero, Springer, Kirk, Barger, Clement, 445 for Davis Schneider, Miles Straw, 384. This lineup has done very well against lefties, something to keep an eye on. And also into Toronto tonight, probably the dome will be open, 70-degree temperatures with a light wind blowing out is always nice. But from the Philadelphia Phillies side, they really should be able to hit Bowden Francis. You need Bryce Harper to get back in the lineup. I mean, come on, kid. You got hit with a pitch. Nothing's broken. Get back out there. The Phillies need you on offense because left-handed batters get the best of Bowden Francis. His last 64 lefties he's faced, Ben, how about this? A 246 ISO power number and a 389 weighted on base percentage on the season. Yeah. If we include the first couple months, a 333 ISO and a 406 weighted on base percentage. Stott doesn't have good numbers against righties, but obviously you're going to settle in the middle of that lineup. Kyle Schwarber should be your guy tonight. And if Bryce Harper is in that lineup, he should as well. One of those two guys, if they both play, will get an RBI. You split it, you get plus money, you move on. But a good chance, Ben, that both of those guys get lefty shots here off of Bowden Francis. That's the angle I want to play tonight.
So, DRS, I'm seeing a couple of conflicting reports as I quickly look for Bryce Harper's status. Is he expected to be back in the lineup today in Toronto?
He's been working on the field at this point. And again, nothing is broken. So I don't know what they're waiting on at this point, but nothing beats having a losing streak, getting a day off, and your guy not playing again. Come on now.
We'll talk more Major League Baseball next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We continue going around Major League Baseball on a full Tuesday slate in the bigs here on the early line on Sports Grid. A very big day under the arch in St. Louis. The second installment of the I-70 rivalry series between the Redbirds and the Royals. Of course, during rivalry weekend in the Show Me State, they met up in Kansas City inside Compton. St. Louis continuing its strong and surprising start to the season. Won two of those three. The Cards, seven games above 500, 33-26. The Royals, just two games above 500. But here we have a big one today. Why? Jack Caglione is set to make his Major League Baseball debut. The sixth overall pick out of Florida in this past July's 2024 MLB draft, already heading to the bigs after a sensational start to his pro career in the minor leagues. He has been called up. We'll see what difference he makes for Kansas City in that lineup. The Royals today, DRS on the road. Michael Lorenzen gets the start. Andre Pallante on the other side for St. Louis. The Cardinals, pretty hefty home favorite. Total stands at 9. What can we expect out of Caglione? What can we expect for the opener of this midweek rivalry set?
Well, the one thing we're not questioning now in a couple games that we've talked about already this morning is weather conditions. How about 82 degrees in St. Louis with a hefty double-digit wind blowing out to Big Mac Land out there in left field? We'll see if that has a difference tonight. But Michael Lorenzen hasn't been a great pitcher on the season and leaking oil as of late. The last 126 batters that he's faced have an ISO against of 241 and a weighted on base percentage of 379. If we look at just lefties alone, that elevates to a 333 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 445. There aren't a lot of great left-handed bats in the lineup today. Usually Nupar is one of those guys you focus on. Average ISO, average weighted on base percentage over the past 30 days against right-handed pitching. But you take a look at Brandon Donovan in the three hole. Not a lot of power, but a 405 weighted on base percentage there, which is somebody you might want to focus on. And Alec Burleson in the seven hole, a 281 ISO and a 417 weighted on base percentage. They should get some pretty good swings here, but you still do need some of those guys in the middle of that lineup to get on base. Not in love with that Cardinals lineup, but they should be able to hit Michael Lorenzen in these temperatures at home. Andre Pallante on the other side, he's got some pretty good numbers, but starting to leak a little bit to right-handed batters. His last 57 right-handed batters he's faced, how about a 135 ISO? He said, I thought he was leaking oil. That weighted on base percentage, a 421. Doesn't strike out very many batters. The ball being in play on a day with as nice as it's going to be in St. Louis with hitting weather does certainly bring it up. So if you're looking at right-handed batters, Bobby Witt in the middle of that lineup, 253 ISO, 335 weighted on base percentage against right-handed pitching over the past couple weeks here. Michael Garcia as well. Those are the guys I would look to. Not great lineups, though. So if you're just fading the atmosphere, saying it's a good hitting ballpark, it's hot temperatures, not great pitchers on the mound, maybe go that direction. But a couple of the batters I pointed out make some sense. Jack Caglione, hey, we've seen guys have great appearances here. First bat up, bang, lift one into the seats. So I'm excited to see what he actually does. It looks like he's expected to be in that five spot here after Vinny Pasquantino, Salvador Perez, and before Michael Garcia.
Yeah, a couple of lefties back-to-back with the Pasquatch and Jack Caglione, who has been just overwhelmingly unreal, of course, during his minor league debut. He had 50 games at both the AA and AAA level. He had 15 home runs, 56 RBIs, a 322 average, a ton of pop. He was a two-way superstar for the Florida Gators during his collegiate career. At this time last year, DRS, he was with UF in the Super Regionals, trying to get to Omaha, of which they did a season ago for the Men's College World Series. Florida, not as kind this year, did not get out of the regional, had some issues with their head coach, Kevin O'Sullivan, maybe not being the most accommodating guy to the grounds crew and the site officials for the NCAA down there in Myrtle, Conway, South Carolina, at the Coastal Carolina Regional. By the way, the Chanticleers are on to the Super Regional. The props, by the way, on Caglione in his debut, minus 180 to record a hit, plus 190 for an RBI, plus 600 for a home run. Any of those cash, you would call it a successful debut for Caglione and KC. And again, let us mark where the odds are right now. Caglione yet to make his debut, and yet the second best price to win AL Rookie of the Year at 12-1. The A's Jacob Wilson is minus 400. Narrative part of the conversation. If Caglione is great from the start, those odds are going to differ drastically in a short amount of time, as they did after the sensational start to his MLB career for Paul Skenes, of course, a season ago. Skenes on the bump today. It is Skenes Day number 36 in the history of Major League Baseball. Skenes and his Pirates, a home favorite today against Lance McCullers and the Astros. Total stands at 7.5. Can Pittsburgh win a start with Skenes on the bump?
Should be able to hold him down. And by the way, quick note there on Jack Caglione. This isn't one of those like, hey, kid, get up there for the weekend and fill in for somebody. We're going to pull you right back down. This is expected to be, if it goes as well as you think, he doesn't ever go back to the minor league baseball. So if you want to make that, oh, well, he missed the first 2 months. Well, he's going to get the final 4 months, it looks like, unless he's a disaster. And if he is a disaster, you weren't going to win that ticket anyway. So you could be betting confidently that way. Let's take a look at Paul Skenes today. Back to being electric on the mound. No surprise here. His last 128 batters over the past 30 days, Ben. How about an 0-43 ISO? say so against in a weighted on base percentage of 213 and a K rate of 28%. The lineup for the Astros is waking up just a bit with hitting right-handed pitchers, but they don't factor all that well. Isak Paredes has some great numbers against right-handed pitching. Jeremy Peña as well. After that, Cam Smith, Victor Caratini, Mauricio Dubon doesn't leave a lot to be desired in that lineup, but also 79-degree temperatures in Pittsburgh in early June and a light wind blowing in from right field, so it shouldn't really hamper any of the bats here. Lance McCullers going through it, on the field and off the field, where I think they finally caught the guy that was overseas making the threats there to his family and kids, so maybe he can rest a little bit easier on the mound tonight, but he has struggled against right-handed hitting on the season.
Yeah.
Here's the issue. Again, it's not a great hitting lineup here for the Pittsburgh Pirates all the way through. Like O'Neill Cruz, he's like, Donnie, just put him in your lineup on a night-to-night basis. Well, he's got a 40% strikeout rate against right-handed pitching. And take a look at Lance McCullers. The one thing he's done well this season, a 105 ISO and a 252 weighted on base percentage and a K rate of 41%. So picture this. He's got a K rate of 41% to lefties, and O'Neill Cruz against right-handed pitching strikes out 40% of the time. And what are we saying? Like, O'Neill Cruz might not even get a foul ball tonight off of Lance McCullers. So as much as I love O'Neill Cruz, that's not a great matchup for him tonight, and we'll see how it pans out. Even though you hate to see him wasting 79-degree temperatures in Pittsburgh, it's probably going to stay under today.
Skeens has been great DRS here as of late. In the month of May, in his last four starts, three total earned runs given up. He had a 1.91 ERA in the month of May in six starts that he made, 4-5 overall this year with a 2.15 ERA. And the Pirates have won the last two starts with Paul Skeens on the bump. Prior to that, they were just 3-7 in the first 10 outings for Skeens this year. Jazz Chisholm back today for the New York Yankees. In the Bronx, the Yanks play host to the Cleveland Guardians. Carlos Rodon has also been great this year. In the Pinstripes, are a $2 favorite now at home. Total is 8. What do you like tonight in the Bronx between Cleveland and New York?
I should win this game. 71-degree temperatures in New York. Like to see that as well. Light wind blowing out to left field always helps. But Tanner Bibee's usually pretty good against right-handed batters, and particularly so over the past 30 days, Ben, with 57 batters that he's faced. An 0.93 ISO and a weighted on base percentage against of 274. Look at that walk rate, 5%. So he's not giving out a lot of free passes. But the focus, as always, is going to be on the left-handed batters. He's been a little bit better over the past 30 days. But look at his seasonal number of 127 left-handed batters he's faced. That's a 239 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 333. Both of those are elevated. Lineup looks like it's going to be. I don't have Jazz Chisholm in the early lineup. That could change, but he is a left-handed batter. So that could impact it. Grisham and Bellinger would be on my card for RBI. I say, Donnie, why not Aaron Judge? Well, every night Aaron Judge can be there. But if I'm just going where Bibee struggles with lefties and Grisham and Bellinger have been on fire against right-handed pitching for as of lefties for the last 30 days, that's the way I would go. Yankees should win this game. Grisham and Bellinger for me with some RBI opportunities today.
Three guys in the bigs with more than 20 home runs. Shohei Ohtani and big dumper Cal Raleigh of Seattle have hit 23. Yep. Aaron Judge with 21. Brian Fonseca joins us up next to preview the NBA Finals.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Still 2 days away from the start of the 2025 NBA Finals between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Indiana Pacers. To help us take an early look at what we can expect throughout the NBA's championship set, Brian Fonseca is here on this Tuesday morning to break it all down. Fonseca, as always, we appreciate the time. Thank you for being here. Excited for the preview of the NBA Finals from you.
As Zach Lowe says, this is why we do this, the NBA Finals. So I'm happy that we're finally here. And I'm probably more excited about these finals than other people seem to be who are caring about the ratings, which I think is stupid.
We have talked about the TV ratings. I think, Fonseca, though, there is an argument to be made when you look at the odds. We hope this is a competitive series. And the odds makers not necessarily expecting that. So if you want fans buy-in, you got to have a series that probably gets to six, Will we see that be the case? Fonseca, you see a minus 750 outright price on the Thunder, a hefty, hefty favorite to win an NBA championship for the first time in more than a decade and a half in Oklahoma City. In fact, for the Thunder to get this done in a gentleman's sweep is the most likely outcome according to the odds makers. I don't think, Fonseca, you could argue the Thunder should not be even a strong favorite, but minus 750. Is it too much odds optimism backing OKC?
I go back and forth on this. I really like the Pacers. I'm somebody who thought coming into the Knicks series, the longer this goes, the more it benefits the Pacers. I hammered the Pacers in game one. I hammered them in game six. And also had a future on them to win from prior rounds in the playoffs. That being said, the matchup here is interesting. But I can't, having watched the playoffs, definitively sit here and tell you that the Pacers have no shot of pushing this series to six or seven. I don't know if they're going to win. I kind of think that, you know, minus 750 for the Thunder, I get it. It also makes them one of the biggest NBA Finals favorites we've seen, which in turn would mean this would be one of the biggest upsets in the Finals that we've ever seen if the Pacers were to pull this off. But all Indy needs to do is split one of the first two games in Oklahoma City, and then we definitively have a series. I think that's where I'm at with it. And I think they're capable of doing that. OKC could occasionally have their duds. And on top of that, Indy, like, I think OKC will welcome the pace. Like, we can get into a little bit of the schematics of this, where I think Indy trying to run all the time could potentially backfire because OKC is just excellent at forcing turnovers. But I can't write Indiana off. I just can't do it.
If we're taking a look, too, Brian, at the series, which makes it fun, and for the people out there that aren't used to getting a full boat of, hey, I watch OKC all season long, or even the Indiana Pacers, can you give us a little bit of a breakdown of what OKC does well and also what the Pacers do well, but also them playing together and who would have the advantage on the court?
OKC is one of the best teams ever at forcing you to make turnovers, while Indy has been one of the better teams I've seen playing at the pace that they have and not turning the ball over a ton. Tyrese Halliburton, if he were in the NFL, he'd be like the most accurate quarterback in the league. It's ridiculous. You know what I mean? And I think with the way that these two styles sort of mesh, I think we can get a lot of points in this series at times because OKC will figure out ways to force turnovers and perhaps welcome that pace. Although there's a world where they're uncomfortable with that pace because they like controlling the action. And Indiana can make you very uncomfortable if you're trying to run up and down with them. The Knicks learned this the hard way because they made the mistake of, hey, let's run with this team, get out in transition. But you can't do that with so much. It's like in boxing when someone's trying to force you into a firefight when you're trying to counterpunch them. Then after a few rounds of going to war with them, you're tired and you can't go back to your game plan of counterpunching because you fought their style and you gave the fight away. Like, Indiana is excellent at doing that. And Indiana is also going to take what they're given. OKC's not going to give them a lot defensively. So it's going to be curious to see how that chess match plays out. Indiana is not like Boston, for example, who Boston's primarily trying to generate three-point shots. Indiana's going to take whatever they can get. If a layup is open, taking that, not kicking it out to three. If a three-point shot is open, great. If a mid-range jumper is open, great. Their offense is balanced in that way. And then Oklahoma City just has guys like you can be, if you're Tyrese Halliburton, you're going to be seen by Alex Caruso and Lu Dort and Cason Wallace and Shai Gilgeous-Alexander at times and Chet Holmgren on a switch and Jalen Williams on a switch. It's going to be guy after guy after guy. It's going to be ridiculous. So it's really about who can enforce their style first. And obviously that tilts towards OKC because they just have such a better defense, probably the best defense we've seen in years.
It seemed, Fonseca, in the Eastern Conference Finals, the Pacers had a clear advantage in terms of balance and depth versus New York. Probably not the case here in the NBA Finals against OKC. As we look at the Finals MVP odds, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander expected to add to the illustrious year of hardware. He is minus 550 to win Finals MVP. His Thunder team minus 750 to win an NBA championship. I ask you a two-part question. If OKC wins, will it be Shai Gilgeous-Alexander? Second part, if not SGA, what does that mean for the entirety of this series?
I think it should be SGA, but I am interested in a future on Jalen Williams because matchup-wise, I wonder who Neesmith is going to have to guard. We saw Neesmith on Brunson a lot. He got in some foul trouble, so Nembhard had to take it in game six, and Nembhard was great. A matchup that has killed him historically, he was great in game six. He was one of the reasons the Pacers finished off that series. And I do wonder who's going to get the Jalen Williams responsibility. He could play the three, he could play the four, he could even play some small ball five. He can play and guard multiple different positions. And I feel like the focus on SGA could potentially open things up for him. And it's not just his scoring, but it's also his rebounding and his playmaking. One of the plays that I've liked most in the playoffs, and I probably play the most, is his rebounds assist over, which is cashed more often than it hasn't. And I'll probably be on that again in this series because OKC is a better rebounding team than Indiana. Indiana is not a great rebounding team. And they should out-rebound Indiana in this series. Maybe not to the degree that the Knicks did, but they have Isaiah Hartenstein and Chet Holmgren, so it's possible. I'm intrigued by Jalen Williams as such a long number. I just think that number is going to drop immediately after like games one, game two. I think Jalen Williams has some real value there. It should be SGA, but I want that long shot because 3,300, you just don't know.
Fonseca sticks around to talk plenty more around the association. DRS, enjoy the money line, my friend. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
So you got Brian Fonseca's thoughts on the NBA Finals as a whole, where the matchup advantages lie in this series, and how we compare these two teams. Fonseca, it starts in two nights, on a Thursday in Oklahoma City. The Thunder, not just a hefty favorite to win the Larry O'Brien Trophy, but a very strong favorite right from the jump. A 9-point favorite in game number one, with a total now on the rise to 231.5. How does the opening game of the 2025 NBA Finals begin in your estimation?
I haven't placed anything yet on game one. I don't know if I will. I want to get a feel for this. This does feel like a series where we get some overs, where we get a couple overs. 231.5, I don't know yet, but I do think, obviously, Indiana wants to push the pace, as we established last segment, and as they established literally since training camp. And then with Oklahoma City, it's just a matter of them generating offense, not just off of turnovers, but also being able to score in the mid-range, score, attack the paint, and things of that nature. They don't take a ton of threes. They don't always take a ton of threes. They can make some, but they're a team that's primarily going to turn their defense into offense, and they're going to do that successfully. And it's like, can Indiana continue to really take care of the ball as they have in many games this season? Or will OKC force them into the trap that the Knicks sort of did in game five of that Eastern Conference Finals, albeit Indy kind of played that as a team that is like, oh, we'll take you back in Indiana. We have a game in hand. We're fine. So I don't think that was their best performance, but I think OKC is going to look at that and be like, all right, here's how we could generate some turnovers and actually, you know, force Indy's hand here, so to speak.
A rest advantage slightly for the Thunder. 7 full off days between winning the West in 5 games against Minnesota. Of course, they remain home before game number one of the NBA Finals on Thursday. But Indiana also a pretty good cushion. 4 full days off after winning in Indianapolis on Saturday in the Eastern Conference Finals. And of course, game number one on Thursday night in OKC. Fonseca, throughout the entirety of the Knicks playoff run, you were working with the New York Post. You were doing those live watch parties. You were involved in each and every minute of New York's postseason march. That did lead to new heights. The first time in the Eastern Conference Finals for the Knicks in 2.5 decades since the year 2000. But of course, failing to get to the NBA Finals as a favorite in the Eastern Conference Finals against Indiana. So with the context involved, Fonseca, would you consider this season a success for the New York Knicks?
I think it's a successful season that ended in disappointment. It's the first time they made it to the conference finals in 25 years. I cannot say that that's a failure. They overachieved, in my opinion, because I didn't think we were going to have a third round of watch parties. I thought we would be done in round two in that Celtics series, where I thought the Celtics would win that in 5 games. and they got some fortunate Celtics just shooting performances that they took advantage of by outplaying them in the fourth quarters, in the second half, and ultimately built the lead and were going to win that series before Jason Tatum got hurt. I don't think the injury sort of impacted it. I obviously give Boston a little bit more of a chance to come back from a 3-1 right. deficit if Tatum is there, but I didn't think they were going to pull that off even with him there. That being said, you lost a series in the Eastern Conference Finals while you were the favorites and had home court against an Indiana team that I would say is beatable, but better. I think Indiana's better. They're better as a team. They don't have better top-end talent, but the way that they play, their depth, they're better coached. I think Tom Thibodeau is a good coach, but I think Rick Carlisle's arguably the best coach in the NBA right now for the last 2 years. With respect to Eric Spoelstra, who, you know, hasn't been as great the last couple of years. But I think with the Knicks, it's a great season. Ended in disappointment. A lot of questions now. And we'll see what happens. I think they probably just make some moves around the edges and mostly run it back and try it again.
30 seconds left here. Top priority then for the New York Knicks to elevate to that next stage next season.
Depth, 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 depth. There's one thing that even the Celtics expose, but definitely Indiana exposes, like the Knicks need to be comfortable going beyond 7-8 guys. Tibbs didn't do that until very late. But they need to develop some of their young guys to see if anyone can take a rotation spot, hit on some veteran minimums, and maybe your taxpayer mid-level exception as well.
Brian Fonseca, tremendous stuff as always, my man. Thank you for being here on this Tuesday on the Early Line on Sports Grid.
Absolutely. Anytime.
Great stuff. NBA Finals starting in 2 days. And, of course, tomorrow the Stanley Cup Final begins. We'll continue to preview it and break it all down tomorrow starting at 8 a.m. Eastern here on the Early Line.